It's 7 o'clock. I'd like to call the meeting to order. Please stand for the pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Conklin?
Here.
French?
Here.
Needhammer?
Here.
Page?
Here.
Solomon?
Here.
Quorum present?
Moving on to the consent agenda. The purpose of the consent agenda is to expedite business by grouping non-controversial items together to be dealt with by one commission motion without discussion. Any member of the commission, staff, or the public may ask that any item or items on the consent agenda be removed and placed as the last item under new business to receive full discussion. Such requests will be automatically respected. We have item A, approval of the June 25th City Commission regular meeting minutes as presented. Item B, approval of a proposal from Jet Pump to perform the maintenance on the lift stations at a cost of $3,700 and authorize the city manager to execute the documents. Item C, approval of a proposal from Jet Pump to repair the Raptor fine screen at a cost of $5,455.80, and authorize the city manager to execute the documents. And we have approval to purchase 3 ballistic plate carries from Armor Express in the amount of $2,878.29, and authorize the city manager to execute the documents. Is there any comments from staff or the public or commissioners?
Move to approve the consent agenda.
I'll second. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Item 4, hearing citizens' comments on non-agenda items. Please identify yourself and a 5-minute limit. Okay, thank you. Moving on to correspondence, we have from the State of Michigan Department of Licensing and Regulatory Affairs regarding the transfer of ownership of a Class C license from K8M Associates to Water Street Cafe LLC for the Water Street Cafe located at 113 Water Street, Point City. Any questions on that?
This was an optional communication from the state. They gave it to us. It's basically with regards to the transfer of the license at the Water Street Cafe. They have new operators at that facility now. It isn't a change in the license, just who's going to be operating it. We have the ability to comment on that, or any member of the public. They get to consider our request. No response is required. Staff has no problem with the transfer that we're aware of. The police used to do background checks on these, but now that's handled by the Electric Control Commission.
Okay. Thank you. Moving on to City Manager's report, Mike.
Yes. There we go. First off, we have some construction updates. A number of them. We're in that season right now. As you probably noticed, the North Lake Street Mill and Resurfacing Project is complete for this year, and design work is going on for the next phase that will go up to West Michigan. Work on the Boyne Mountain CDBG supported force main project on M75 has resumed. You might have noticed that the crews pulled off for a week or so to attend other projects. Site work on the new surge center in the business park at the intersection of M75 South and Mall Drive has begun. That started yesterday, and they're busy clearing and prepping the site for construction. Site work on the new dental office across the street at the Noel Roberts site resumed today. It looked like they were removing some of the old foundations from the building. A public information meeting on the Cedar and Terrace Road Reconstruction Project was held in this room yesterday. We had about 21 people showed up. It was a good meeting, good attendance, good discussion. We had the contractor, the engineer, staff able to meet with the public. That project, the first portion of it on Cedar Street, is scheduled to begin on July 22nd. The second portion on Terrace Street will begin on approximately August 14th, and the project should run until mid-October. Another great 4th of July was held here in Boyne City. I heard very many compliments for various components of it, everything from the parade in the beginning with the visiting band from Wisconsin to the conclusion of the fireworks of the night. So congratulations to everybody that put it on, all the volunteers, the staff, and the whole community for coming together for that. Our auditors are in town for their annual review of our financial records. So if there's anything that you want to talk about, they're done in the conference room during the day. Our first dust control treatment on our gravel roads for the season started on Monday and should have been completed today. Right across the drive here, the playground engineered chips that were recently approved by the City Commission were delivered and installed this morning. Same with new playground equipment for Peninsula Beach that was installed today as well too. The tree cutting program that's going on around town is the city one is about 75% complete. In case you haven't noticed, we will be having Boyne Thunder this weekend. Some of the boats are starting to arrive, and it'll be including obviously this Friday's stroll the streets, which is always an exciting one. Our Department of Public Works is working in cooperation with the Charlevoix, Antrim, Kalkaska, Emmett County's Invasive Species Management Area, and they're going to be applying a herbicide in the areas of East Vogel and Bailey Street to treat for knotwood. That's a pretty severe invasive species that's out there. It's, some people call it giant knotwood. It gets really, really big and break up buildings, foundations, or pavement, things of that nature. It's on the DNR's list of things. So this is a collaborative group. The group, which is known by its acronym CAKE, operates out of the Soil Conservation District offices, and they've been meeting with Tim to work on this project. So there's a little bit more information about that, and we can get more for you if you'd like. You'll notice we have a couple of extra flags up here today on the dais, and those are in preparation of our visit from our sister city to be in the Boyne Valley of Ireland. The official twinning ceremony will be taking place on Thursday the 18th at 6:15, and we're working through the details on that as they've kind of changed up who's all coming and things. So we'll get some more information as we get closer to that. Next week, on the 8th, also on the 18th, we'll be having the annual food truck rally. And special for this year, the Harley Owners Group, also known as the Hogs, will be coming to visit Boyne City that evening from their gathering that they're having out at Boyne Mount. So we're expecting quite a few bikes in town. And they've been here a couple times before, and it's been a good time. At our last City Commission meeting, we had a little discussion at the end of it about having a future meeting with to follow up the discussions on the land banks. I sent an email with some possible dates for the commission shortly before tonight's meeting. If the commissioners can kind of look at their calendars, I'm recommending that we look at the dates pretty much after the vacation's over. If we're trying to get East Jordan and everybody in Charlevoix, everybody together, I'm thinking trying to juggle everybody's schedule before school starts is going to be difficult. So I'm recommending that we look at the 5th, 11th, or 13th of September. And those are some of the dates that were proposed by Mr. Mishler. So if you can give me some feedback on that, I would appreciate it. I'll be out of the office for most of the next 2 weeks after this Friday. And I've also heard from a couple commissioners regarding their tentative plans involving the Michigan Municipal League Convention in Detroit at the end of September. So if you have a chance to look at that, let me know. I've heard from a couple people that didn't think they were going to be able to make it. If you'd let me know one way or the other, just so, okay, so we have to make reservations or anything of that nature, we can do that before they're all snapped up. So, and also just to report, and this is ongoing kind of as we meet one of those last minute breaking news stories, but the Boyne City Main Street program has prepared and submitted Great America Main Street Award application again this year. Ingrid, Kelsey, and a little subcommittee have been working pretty feverishly on it the last few weeks to get it together. And that is pretty much going out. I think Ingrid's getting ready to push the button as we speak.
As soon as our spacing stops being
So hopefully we'll get some additional good feedback on that as we go forward. So if you have any questions on those or other items, I'd be glad to try and address them.
Thank you, Mike.
Yes. Just for clarification, I thought the twinning ceremony was at 6:45.
That's why I'm going to give you the updated agenda.
Okay, got it. All right.
I figured I'd rather have you there half an hour early. Some of the speakers from Ireland were hoping to be able to make like our presentation, so they've been lobbying for some more time, and we're trying to shrink it up. So,
yeah. Any other questions? Okay, moving on. In our packet, we have financial reports, officers, boards, and standing committees. In our packet, we have draft minutes of the June 6th Main Street Board meeting, the draft minutes of the June 13th Parks and Rec Commission, and the draft minutes of the June 17th Planning Commission meeting. Are there any questions, commissioners? Okay, moving on to old business. Item A, loss on Lake. Public Act 210, public hearing. I think at this time, it is 7:11, and I will open up the public hearing, and we will have presentations, and then we will have an opportunity for any comments from the public and our staff, and then close the public hearing and go to the board deliberation.
You have in your agenda packet some background material from our consultant on this matter, Mac McClellan for Aho Malby. He's also prepared a brief PowerPoint. I think I'll let him go through those materials first, if that's okay with the commission, and then I can add anything and then entertain any questions or comments at that point. So, Scott, where do you have the PowerPoint presentation?
On your computer.
I know it's on your computer.
Mike, there's printed copies here too if anyone wants to know.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Pleased to be back with you again, and thank you for enduring another one of my presentations here. So, as Kelsey mentioned, if anybody would like a copy, she has some that are there. This is the public hearing and consideration for the commercial rehabilitation exemption certificate for the Lost on Lake Street project. Going to talk tonight a little bit about the purpose of what we're doing here tonight, the site and the project. A little bit about PA 210, the process for establishing the district and providing the exemption for those districts, the findings of our evaluation that are included within your resolution, and a recommendation for that. There's two purposes here tonight. One is to hold a public hearing as required by the Act for a exemption certificate for the Commercial Rehabilitation Act. That is an application that's been submitted by Lofts on Lake Street. Marilyn Crowley, the Vice President of Lost on Lake Street, is here as well tonight and can answer any questions about the projects. And then, once the public hearing is done, consideration of a resolution approving that certificate by the board. For the site is at the corner of State and Lake Street. It includes three different properties, 100 and 120 State Lake Street and 114 State Street is at the corner. The project and the application was requested by Michigan Community Capital, which is the kind of parent company for Lofts on Lake Street. The proposal is for a three-story mixed-use building with 42 rental units on the second and third floor. Rendering of the project as it stands now. They have received planning and zoning approvals for this with an estimated investment of over $10 million. And it does meet the definition of a qualified facility under PA 210. This act was passed in 2005 along with some other companion acts to help support commercial rehabilitation, and it essentially provides for the establishment of district and to provide exemptions from certain taxes for approved projects. The city can establish one or more districts if they wish, and consisting of one or more parcels of property. The county has the opportunity to reject the establishment of the district within 28 days of notification. And in essence, this provides for an exemption. Tax exemption essentially freezes the taxable value of the property at the time of exemption for a period of up to 10 years. It does not include land and personal property. Those are subject to continued taxation. The financial need for the project is an important consideration. Michigan Community Capital, and Marilyn may wish to speak to this a little bit more. It's an independent nonprofit charitable organization which was put together and funded by allocations from state and federal government, local financial institutions, and foundations. Their purpose is really to provide attainable housing and support and stimulate redevelopment in both urban and rural communities in underserved areas. They have provided two pro formas, initial pro forma and a summary pro forma. We evaluated those pro formas, and it does show losses through the first 3 years and just break even over that time period, over that 10-year time period, proposed 10-year time period, without the tax abatement. Even then, the returns are not anything that a private developer would be interested in because Michigan Community Capital is a nonprofit supported by a number of state and federal agencies and banks. They are able to achieve a lower rate of return and make the projects happen. The public benefit for the project is there will be downtown units, 42 units, with in an attainable price range. The project is committed at least 50% of those will be priced at 80% of the average median income rents for that project. There will be some additional jobs from the restaurant or retail or office. On the first floor for the project. And then after the 10-year period is, there'll be a significant increase in the property taxes after that 10-year exemption period. The other opportunity is it does leverage some significant state funding, at least $1.5 million, I believe, is the request into the state for some of the support, and also provides that kind of significant potential for spin-off redevelopment within this area as well. So there's two components to the process. One is establishing the district, and the second is approving the exemption certificate for the project within that district. The City Commission reviewed the overall proposal on April 23rd and held a public information session on May 1st. And the City Commission established the district on May 28th. The City Commission, or the County Commission, reviewed the proposal at their meeting on June 12th. And the 8-day period for the county ended on July 6th with no action on their part. So they did not reject the district. The district may move forward. The second part of that is the actual application for the project within that district. Lawson Lake Street submitted the application on June 7th with the additional information on the form required by the state and all the information that was necessary as well. We reviewed that and provided a recommendation for the approval. The City Commission, by their action tonight, would approve the application if they so desire, and then that's forwarded to the State Tax Commission that actually issues the certificate. The effective date of the exemption would be beginning December 31st of 2019 and expire December 31st of 2029. Thank you. The findings are important. There's actually stipulations within the act of the process and findings that the commission has to make in its activity, that the rehabilitation has not started more than 6 months before the application's middle. That is the case. It does constitute a qualified facility within the commercial rehabilitation district. It will increase commercial activity, create employment, and increase residents in the community. The applicant has stated in writing that the project would not occur without the tax exemption, and the applicant is not delinquent in any payment of property taxes related to the project. There is a tax incentive agreement that codifies the arrangements for the commercial rehabilitation certificate. Some performance requirements have been included for completion, for meeting the rent rate commitment, and as well, not including any rental short-term rental terms without approval. There are reporting requirements in there, revocation and recapture if that performance is not met as well. So our recommendation is to approve the resolution, adopt the resolution approving the commercial rehabilitation certificate for Lawson Lake Street. for the development at 100, 120 State Street and 114 Lake Street. Excuse me, all the way around. Having trouble here. And authorize the city manager and the city treasurer to execute the tax incentive agreement between Lawson and Lake Street and the city of Boyne City.
Thank you, Mac. I'm sure there'll be some questions for you. I'd like to turn over to Marilyn. Welcome back.
Thank you. I actually haven't presented in front of y'all as a group, just the planning commission. So nice to meet you. I guess I wanted to, I didn't like to have a formal presentation, so I'm glad yours was so crisp. But we just came from the groundbreaking of our Cadillac Lofts project, like literally an hour and a half ago. And we're really excited about it, and we think it's a really similar model to what we're doing here. And I guess I just wanted to reiterate or state that this project is very difficult financially, and a public-private partnership, not only with the local commission, but also across state agencies, is extremely important to get this done. So I really appreciate your consideration, and we truly wouldn't be able to make this project work without this kind of tax exemption. I wanted to kind of state for those who, I feel like y'all probably know this, but for those in the audience that don't, are familiar with this program, we will continue to pay the current tax rate for the 10 years. So the city actually won't be losing any money. We just won't be paying the increase on our $10 million investment. So there actually won't be any kind of loss. And so we'll still actually be paying a significant increase, but it's going to the SET and the school operating. It won't be going to the county and the local taxing. So current taxes will stay the same. Some of our taxes will still go up significantly. So we are definitely still paying pretty high taxes, just not as high as a $10 million investment would typically receive. And I would say that this is a really common tool, or it's in the family of tools that are used for downtown projects. So thank you for considering it. I wanted to, I guess, give an update so that you have all the information when you consider the approval. We did buy the property yesterday, so we've got it. We want to do the project. So that's exciting news. We met with our contractor yesterday, and they already visited the site and have started putting together a list of kind of concerns and questions, including, wow, there's a lot of utility lines running all over the site. How much is that going to cost? So we're really digging into we kind of have a target financial budget, but we're very much in the time that I've started this conversation about the abatement, we've really started to dig into the existing conditions. So we've finished our environmental testing. It is contaminated. There's significant mercury on the site. So the first 3 feet of soil will need to be dealt with, remediated. And then we have done our geotechnical, which revealed we're going to need specialized foundations going down up to 6 feet piers into the ground. So we're dealing with hot soil, we're dealing with poor soil, and we're dealing with high water tables. So those are all things that add up to be very expensive. So that's kind of the update on, we've just been kind of continuing due diligence, continuing architectural, bought the property, hired a contractor. So we're very much committed to this project. An update on financing, we actually have been invited by the Federal Home Loan Bank of Indianapolis to submit for an additional grant funds called the AHP funding. It could be up to $500,000, but we would have to income restrict more of our units more than what we're currently targeting. So right now we're targeting, which in y'all's approval, can you say 51% at 80% or less, so that we, if we want to charge less than 80%, we can?
Any discussion for the group?
Okay.
Yes.
So you had it at 80%, and so if the market, if 80% of the AMI is higher than what the market is, we want the ability to charge less. But that was just a side note I saw in the presentation. Anyway, this AHP grant funding would, if we get it, would restrict an additional 15 units to be in the $500 to $600 range. So we would allow it to be even more kind of attainable than the 80% level, which we're targeting in kind of the high 700s to low 800s as a starting price point. So we would still do, if we were to get that grant, which we would find out in November, we would do like a third of the units at this lower price point, a third at the 80% price point, and then a third at the whatever market rate would be. But that wouldn't change our, we would still do year-round leases targeting residents here. We wouldn't be targeting short-term rentals. So that wouldn't change it. But I wanted to give you that update so that if you do support this and then you find out our rents are lower than what we told you because we got this grant, that we didn't like change it on you. But we don't know if we're gonna get that until November. I think that's all of our updates right now. We're targeting a late November start. If we do receive this additional source of funding, it could potentially push us to a early spring start. So we're still kind of working through that process. And then one other update, we are working through putting together an application for environmental conditions for a grant. And so we are kind of studying the costs of what the environmental remediation is going to be. And that is a grant between the city and Eagle.
The city would be an could be an applicant, yes.
Or the, who are the different potential applicants?
The DDA, the Brownfield Authority, or the county.
Okay, so we would be looking for partnership. We wouldn't be looking for any kind of matching funds or anything, but basically to apply on our behalf to have the money flow through to help pay for some of the contamination. So I know I'm springing a lot on you, but I guess I wanted to, it's changing every day. We're working on it every day to move it forward, and I wanted to kind of set the tone of all the pieces we're pulling together so that you understand we could potentially be back here asking for application for this Eagle funding or you know, various other grant funding sources. So this is the request right now to the city, and you know, I'm happy to continue to update as we find out more information, but sorry, it's a lot of it's been a long day just telling you everything I know about the project. So
it sounds like the Eagle grant that she's referring to is a very similar program to what we did for Ray Acres, where we had to be kind of the intermediary, the requesting body, and the facilitator to make that happen. So we're very familiar with that. We've just done one on M75 that's currently underway right now. So.
Okay. We're just in the very beginning stages. We just got our environmental report back. We're kind of processing how much more is this going to cost us. So we, you know, potentially do we need a vapor mitigation system? We're kind of working through all those questions. So definitely this project is working on it every day, and it's a it evolves every day, but this is still the project that we're doing. So the actual project hasn't changed, just kind of what we're working on. So let me know if you have any questions.
I was just going to really raise that point, and it wasn't accurate on there, but the resolution does indicate the at minimum of 51% to be priced at 81 AMI income rents or less.
Okay.
So the resolution language is still correct.
Mike, do you have anything to add?
Well, you received in your agenda packets, let me just close out of this for a second. I'm not coming in any into the session. Get back up to here. You have a memo from Matt that's in here. A certain number of pages with a lot of the information. It has the actual application form that was first part was completed by Marilyn and her crew. Then it also has information from the that was completed from the assessor as well. This is their narrative that they included with that. Here's information from our assessor talking about the existing taxable values that would be remaining on the property. And as mentioned by both Marilyn and Matt, property and personal values would continue to increase as the markets dictate, and there will be some other increases for taxable values that help support the school systems and things of that nature.
So what was the total amount? What's the total amount now?
You'll have an opportunity.
Here's an information about what the total amount is now. A graph of the taxable values prepared by our basically, on the 2019 values for the three properties that are affected, and those were on that map that Max showed earlier. It's also in this packet, but it includes the Old Valley Yacht Brokerage building, the Old First Merritt Bank building, and those are both on North Lake Street, and also the Bike Fix shop on State Street, those three parcels. The total taxable value, this is the chart that shows them from basically 2015 to 2019. Small increase from just a little under $200,000 for all three properties to currently at $235,182. And those would be the base values going forward. So that would not decrease. In addition, again, here are the three properties that we were just talking about. You saw that map before. Then you have additional information from Mac on the background materials as well. So then we have a copy of the proposed resolution to commission is comfortable adopting the exemption certificate. We are recommending the full 10 years for this project, but the commission could select a period between no years and 10 years. 10 is the max that's allowed under the statute. Following up on some of the discussions that we had both with the county and also at our last city commission, we put together a draft tax incentive agreement that basically outlines the understanding between the parties going forward. And this was put together relatively quickly. We may or may not want to consider this portion of it or make the rest of it contingent upon working out the details of this. But we want to get this before the commission so we could start to give us some direction on how you want to proceed. And we received some feedback from Maryland's attorney on it as well, too. There's a section with regards to section 2.4b where they're suggesting some alternate language, and we can get into that whenever the commission is ready to do so. And that kind of talks about if there is some type of default, what type of penalty or what happens to the abatement at that point. And let's see. I want to see if there's one last thing in here. Sorry, just scroll through this. There's a lot of pages. I'm just doing this, and I'm probably getting everybody else dizzy. I just want to see if there is a page you. Yes. One of the things that when the agenda packet originally went out is Mac talking about the letter of statement of need from Mission Community Capital, the loft on Lake Street. This has been received since the agenda packet went out, and it is included. It's now part of the formal packet, and it's digitally on the city's website. But it basically states lots on Lake Street's needs for the support, which is one of the conditions that we have to meet, or one of the findings that has to take place, one of the requirements. So that's the information I have for you. Overall, as Mac has mentioned, this has gone through a number of public hearings, both with regards to the project itself at the Planning Commission level, on the design and the physical aspects of it. This is our second public hearing with regards to the Public Act 210. The first one was with regards to the establishment of the district. We also had, as Mac mentioned, a public information session. Since we haven't used Public Act 210 specifically, we provided other financial incentives for a number of projects, both downtown in our business park and other industrial sites, to make things happen as well, too. Overall, from my perspective, I still continue to believe that this is a great project. Some of the opportunities that Maryland is talking about where we're able to, they might have the ability to provide some lower rents for some additional people as well too and still keep the project viable are exciting, and we'll see how those pan out and go forward. Nothing that they're saying is surprising to me at all. I mean, we've been hearing a lot of these things that we've been looking to create additional housing, attainable housing in the community, that it just really doesn't cash flow, and it is going to need some type of support to make this happen. Is a priority, and it's one of the goals that the community has a established through their goal setting process. And this seems to punch all the buttons that I think that we've chalked out and talked about as a community. It's consistent with our land use plans, our zoning requirements, and the needs of the community. So I think it's a great opportunity. I think it's a great potential project. And I think we're fortunate to have Michigan Community Capital Office on Lake Street here to work with us. So I'd be glad to answer any questions, but my recommendation is a complete support with Max's outline that we have here, is to recommend approval of the Public Act 210 application as submitted, contingent upon working out the final language on the tax incentive agreement.
Thank you, Mayor. At this time, I'd like to open it up to any comments from staff, department heads, and or the public. And we may not be able to answer your questions right away, but we do have our experts right here tonight, so we'll try to incorporate you. Yes, and please state your name, and we're going to give you a 5-minute limit.
Good. Thank you, sir. Ross McLean, and just to clear it up, I'm here as a resident of Evangeline Township within the Boyne City School District. And to start right off, I don't begrudge anybody for the application or the request. I have no opposition to the project. I do have questions that I don't expect answers to, but as you go into deliberation, I just want to make sure that you've heard the questions as part of your deliberation, and I appreciate this opportunity. First question would have been, or is, to quote from the notice for tonight's meeting, the approval of the commercial rehabilitation exemption certificate would in essence freeze the taxable value of the property except for land and personal property for its taxes, blah, blah, blah. This was addressed a little bit, but I'm still confused. What does the portion of the statement except for land and personal property mean? And again, I'm not looking for answers. I'll accept that these are rhetorical. How many potential, my next question would be, how many potential Boyne City Public School students are expected to reside within the 42 units, residential units included in the project? And following that question, if the number of students arising from 42 units is less than 11 or 12, wouldn't that mean a net loss in funding for the local school district? I appreciate there was some comment about increased taxes. Again, unfortunately, I don't understand that. But on a $10 million investment, I'm guessing take us to an SEV of $5 million, which would render about $90,000 in school taxes a year, versus, if I'm estimating off of the numbers that were presented, around $2,100 now. If we're foregoing $88,000 a year in taxes, and we don't have enough new students out of that housing to make up the difference, it sounds to me like it's a net loss to the school district. And you probably would understand why I'd be concerned about that. But again, I'm here as a resident. If the approval of the commercial rehabilitation exemption certificate results in a net loss of school funding for the affected school district, why would the taxpayers of the district support such an approval? And I guess, inherently with that question, if someone's paying less than they would have, doesn't that mean that everybody is paying more than what they would have? And I'm not quite sure. If there's an economic justification for something, no problem. I can see through that or see to that. But in this case, one of my questions was how much funding from the Michigan Strategic Fund. That was answered. I appreciate the information. But it brings to me the question of, why should the 99.6% of the taxpayers across the state of Michigan want their tax dollars used to subsidize some persons, organizations, or communities' commercial and or investment venture in Boyne City? And maybe there's a good answer to it. Again, I just want to make sure you think about it as you go into the deliberations. The question I had about what definition of rehabilitation is being used was well answered with your 3 points of the problems that property confronts. Appreciate that information, thank you. And the next biggie is, what assurances are in place to assure that the residential units are local affordable housing units versus seasonal or recreational owned places? I don't know if there is any way to control that, but if you guys are comfortable with with that in your minds, I support it. I guess the other practical question is, if we already have storefronts, empty storefronts existing in Boeing City, and restaurants that are struggling to even stay open multiple days a week, all of them looking for labor, how do we justify the subsidies that are being requested as part of this project to create even more retail space than apparently restaurant space? So thank you very much for hearing my questions. Good luck in your deliberations, and thanks for doing what you do.
Thank you very much. There's some questions there that could be answered, but we're going to continue on with public input. Let's say your name.
My name is Barbara Ball-Fustiang. I live in 1003 Hall Street in Boeing City. I had a couple of questions. The soil that you're going to be removing, where does that go to, since it's toxic?
Well, can we remember that questions are directed to the chair?
Well,
we'll be addressed.
Okay. So we got that question, right. Okay.
And then, what is the median income? What is that income base? Like, how much is the average rent that will go below or will go above or whatever? How much is the average median?
Okay. And that information is available. Please continue.
Okay. I couldn't find it, that's what I was asking. And, I too have concerns because I do work with the downtown district. And we do already have storefronts that are empty, but we also have a lack of help to work in those businesses. And whether it be the type of business they are, and people are looking for something, a job that is better, providing benefits and that kind of thing, usually restaurants are not, or part-time workers working in stores don't really have benefits either. So I'm just kind of saying, do we really want to have more storefronts? I mean, another restaurant that is struggling. I mean, the people that are already here and paying their taxes, and going through all of this, you know, I don't want to kick them. I don't want to kick a dying horse. You know, I just don't want to hurt them any more than they are being hurt, because they are not getting the tax payment. So, you know, I would like you all to consider that too. It is very, very difficult to staff as many restaurants as we have. I don't know if you all were around downtown this past weekend or not, but it's one of the biggest problems and one of the biggest complaints that you heard from people. You know, where's all the staff? Where's all the staff? Even with tips running $200 and $300 a night, it's not attracting enough people. So, or maybe that area, that age has moved on. You know, you've got all these baby boomers retiring. Just for an example, we've got 8 million leaving the workforce and 4 million going in. We need to be careful about how much, what kind of space we throw out there for people. So, you know, just wanted you to consider that too. I thank you all for all that you do, but I am part of the community and I do have concerns. And those pamphlets that you all presented were not available for the public out there. Will they be available?
We have some available right now.
My name is Chris Lismer. I live at 406
Gold Street. I'm one of the baby boomer retirees. My husband's originally from the past year, I think, down the state. Thank you. I have one concern in the presentation, the first presentation. It says there, no less than 30-day rentals. 30-day rentals, then you're starting to get into vacation properties.
We're avoiding that.
Okay, that's a concern.
We're avoiding the short-term rentals.
I did a quick drive when I saw the meeting was tonight. I missed the other ones. Where do you find out when you're having these meetings? Online? Because I missed all the previous ones. Your average salary versus your median income is totally different. I went and looked it up. Your average salary is like $24,000. The median household is $44,000. So for a single person, they aren't going to be able to afford it unless you get that extra grant at $500 to $600 a month. So, and I'm seeing, I saw like 8 empty storefronts just going around town for 15 minutes. I'm concerned. You're not going to be able to fill that space. And if you do fill the space, will you empty out already established buildings for them to move over to a newer property? And you have 3 major properties for sale right now in town. You're the big one, I don't know the name of it, they own the 2 stores. The Dairy Queen, it's not a Dairy Queen, but that's been for sale since it was here the first summer, and it's been for sale since. And then your party store over on, is it Park? That's been for sale for a couple of years. I'm concerned you aren't going to be able to fill all these spaces. And I'm concerned that the young kids that are working for $10 an hour, they aren't going to be able to afford the rent for those. They're living in the houses that are run down and packing up a whole bunch of them in town. So that's my concern. Sorry. Thank you.
We appreciate it. Thank you. Any other comments? Yes, sir. Ron?
Ron Perger, 1121 Perger Press, Boise. I missed the other meetings, but since I've been back for it, I've talked to a lot of, I call locals, people who have been here for a long time, and they don't want this. They don't want this, and I'm afraid the commission is not listening to what people really want. You know, I mean, you don't have parking for this, and, you know, that's going to be a problem. So what, they're going to go park over the memorial or, you know, park someplace else where, you know, it's going to be someone else's. I mean, I understand that the city, Boise City, has parking all over town. So what, they're going to have to go home and just walk. And I don't understand this. And of course, I go on with the rest of them said, you know, we got the vacant storefronts already. So what, we're going to have more? I remember 10 years ago when we built the memorial, you know, over here, and the city commission push down our throat not to go over 6 feet high. And now we've got City Hall, which is more than 6 feet high because they want to block the view of Lake Charlevoix. And you just got another building that's going to continue right on with everything else. I don't understand. Listen to the people. And thank you for everything you do.
Thank you. Any other comments? I think at this point I'll give Marilyn an opportunity. You can address some points if you want. You don't have to. Just closure and or addressing some points. Matt, you want to start?
Yeah, sure. I'd be happy to address a couple of the questions about real property, personal property, and also school funding a little bit. Typically, appraisal components include 3 different components. One is the land itself, the property itself. Personal property that may go in, it's not part of the fixed assets of the building itself. And those will continue to, those values will continue to rise as part of this. It's not exempt or frozen. It'll just be the building value that will be frozen on this. So there's small incremental increases, 1.5-2% to the land or personal property that'll be taxed at a regular rate. And then but the building will be the only thing that would be frozen and exempt from that taxation. With respect to school funding, this actually does not have a direct impact that the school, SET and school operating taxes will still be paid by the developer. So there is no loss to the school district.
Except on the lower, the guarded rate as opposed to the actual value rate.
It'll actually be whatever the appraiser identifies as the value of the property. For the land, the building, and everything.
Oh, okay.
Only local taxes are the ones that are impacted by the exemption.
Thanks. It was explained otherwise to me.
Okay. And I'll just also say that even any other exemptions, the way that I understand school, I'm not an expert in it, but working in it a lot, is that the school funding is that all of the school operating taxes will go to the district, and that will be a certain amount. And then the state will pay from the school aid formula the difference between that collected locally and the per pupil allocation, so that any exemptions or capture any of those kinds of things, the schools are held harmless for their funding. They still receive the same amount.
Can I know that you're relatively accurate?
Okay.
So when you're a homeowner and you're exempt from those mills and you have a student, then that's kind of one thing to consider. This property, to answer your question, how many students are we anticipating? They're mostly studios and one bedrooms, so we're really targeting kind of working single or couple. So there won't be many students, but because it's a commercial property, we don't have the homestead exemption. So we're paying the full increase of the full taxable value for SET, which stands for school exemption tax.
School education tax.
School education tax. And school operating. So those actually will be significantly higher than what they are now, with really not very
because
much.
Because it includes the improvements that are being made.
Yes.
They'll be taxed at the 5 million taxable rate at the 18 mills plus the 6
million. That certainly solves the big dollar concern I had, and I appreciate very much the attention you gave to it.
You're welcome. The question on what happens to contaminated soils. So the process is very regulated by the, well, it used to be called the Department of Environmental Quality, and they just changed their name. So we have a bunch of data that explains what's in the soil, why it's there, and then basically our environmental consultant submits what's called a due care plan, but it's basically like the game plan for how you handle it. So depending on what it is, it either needs to be manifested, which is taken off-site to like an approved landfill that the DEQ has already regulated. Or if it's left on-site, it can be treated, it can be capped so that people can't have access to it, and potentially there, I mentioned a vapor mitigation system, but if there's any additional harm, then we could potentially be putting like an air filtration system in the building. But all of that is kind of recorded. The game plan is submitted to the DEQ, and the DEQ accepts it. So we are heavily regulated, and it's heavily scrutinized by the regulatory agency who's in charge of tracking that. So to answer your question, I don't know exactly what landfill, but it's like a designated place where everybody takes their soil, if it's, do you know where it would go here?
Yeah, any of the soils would need to be sent to a type 2 landfill. There are a couple of options in this area. Waters, I think, is one. It just depends on the arrangements. Wexford, but they have to be, they're regulated type 2 landfill. They can't take any soils off and take them anyplace else. They have to go to a approved disposal facility.
And I would say 100% of the properties we work on have contaminated soils, because we're working in downtowns, and Michigan is a dirty industrial place, and we've done a lot of dirty industrial activity. So we've, all of our properties that we own, because they're downtown, have contamination from railroads and from oil kind of service places, or dry cleaners, or
underground storage tanks.
gas station. So it sounds kind of scary. It's very expensive, but it's something that there's a lot of professionals, including Mac, who it's their job to study it, to price it, to clean it up, and to regulate it. So it sounds scary. It is expensive, but it's something that we're really used to dealing with. And we're really used to accessing grant funds. There is grant funding available to help clean it up. So we through this project, the site will be better than what it is now. It will be deemed safe for humans after we're done with the project. Whereas right now, it's been sitting like that for who knows how long. It's really only dangerous if you're like getting into the soil, but so I don't want to like cause an alarm that we're all going to get sick. But my point is, almost every piece of property in a downtown will be contaminated in some way.
I do understand that. My maiden name is.
Yeah, Bugs.
Okay.
What are some other questions that I haven't addressed?
Do you want to continue with answering some of those questions?
No, I think Marilyn's asking if there was anything from the audience that wasn't answered.
Right, I agree. I'm asking commissioners, do we want to go down that avenue? I think maybe Marilyn, the whole process, well, back to your concern about the cost. Well, who can afford the rent? How does that medium income, $24,000 versus $38,000?
So we use the data provided by the Michigan State Housing Development Authority annually, and they get that from the Department of Housing and Urban Development. It is not the average, it's the area median income. It's not the average median income. So it's data that we are provided, and we basically set rents based off of what is provided. And I did provide the schedule of both the incomes and the rents in the packet. So it's based off of how many people are in your household. So for a one person, the 80%, we keep saying 80% of the area median income, the target of that is $35,520. For one person, and for two people, it'd be $40,640. So a potential situation in our units could be, if they're renting a two-bedroom, it could be two people making $20,000 a year. So I think that we have the potential to address a wide range of incomes, whether they have a roommate or not. So if we were to get this additional grant, we would be targeting a lower price point. So instead of 35, we would be targeting $22,000 a year for one person and $25,000 for two people. But we really can't financially make it feasible to drop rents that low unless we get additional grant funding. So we would like to, because that would create some variety of people who could live in the same, they're the same unit, just different price points depending on what their income is. But definitely we're committing to at least 51% to be priced, targeting those rental rates. So according to this chart, the max that we could charge for rent with utilities included for a one person at that threshold would be $880, and for a two person would be $1,016. I don't know if we feel the market could support that yet, but that's kind of would be our max. 51% of the units would be at that level. So we could potentially be charging lower than that, depending on what we feel like the market could support. So Michigan Community Capital as an organization is not a low-income housing developer. I would say our primary mission is to is focused around economic development, kind of community revitalization, and then this workforce attainable housing kind of price point. So we typically don't do units that are priced lower than the 80% area median income. It's just not our mission. If the community feels there needs to be rents lower than that, then they really need to be targeting and courting a low-income housing tax credit developer. That being said, we really hope that we get this additional grant so we can keep rents to be lower. So although that's typically not the price point we're targeting, we do hear that that's a need, and so we are going through kind of the additional steps of trying to bring the rents even further down than what I outlined. So hopefully that answers the question, but definitely this chart was provided.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Anything else, Matt?
I don't know, unless the commission has questions.
Okay. Okay, at this time, it's 8 o'clock, and we'll close the public hearing, and we'll go to board deliberation. Ron, you want to start?
Yeah. I'd like to say that I've constant contact with large groups of seniors, and just about every one of them are in support of this project, and would like to live here almost downtown. And many of them would like to get rid of their cars too. So it's I think it's a win-win for a great majority of people that are looking for that type of lifestyle. It's you get my age and some of my friends are older than I am, that's how they need some deferred maintenance on their homes. They'd like to be out of them and be in a, you know, a place where they're not saddled with these not only the expenses, but the problem of maintaining them. So, and I do listen to the people, and it's got overwhelming support for the people that I know. Like I said, I work with large groups of them constantly, 2 or 3 days a week. So I support the program and support this rehabilitation exemption. So I'm good with it.
Thank you, Ron.
Dean? Yeah, good with it. The, just a couple of questions, a couple of comments. First of all, you know, we were meeting with the commissioners, they raised issues about the performance. Equipment performance standards within the in a separate room with the city, and I think the track that you're on now with the ones you proposed and probably working on the details of, I think are exactly what county commissioners were expressing, and I think what some of us were too, that is to prevent vacation rentals or weekly rentals, and to have assurance that during the time that a public benefit is offered, a 10-year period, that the rental agreement stays in place, and that there's an opportunity to recapture if those terms aren't met. So I think that those are where I'll probably be going. And just one minor little question, I think would be probably, I don't have to address this tonight, since you're still talking about the agreement, but just to guard against any sort of backdoor way of being able to establish a weekly rental. I think, you know, when I was a renter years and years ago, you had the opportunity to sublet, you know, and it wouldn't be unfortunate if someone were to rent and then immediately list the property on a vacation rental site. And I don't know if it is implicit in real estate law that can or can't happen, or whether it's something that ought to be added to that agreement here. Just a comment about that as a concern.
You can write that in. I was a broker.
Please.
You don't have to sublet.
Right. Anyhow, that's the folks who know about this stuff, but it just came to mind. The other comment I wanted to make was just kind of kudos to everyone who's been involved, especially, you know, Mike and Scott from McMarilyn and Matt, that I feel as a commissioner that in this process, which has been a little bit complicated, you know, from the whole of the proposal and then the planning commission consideration, there's concerns about parking. That as a planning commission, I hope that we feel this way in a certain way, that we receive all the information we need to make this, these decisions and consider these things. You know, for me, speaking slowly in a way that I can understand is wonderful. And to have the information to us and also to be available on the website, advertising via Facebook, and many opportunities, extra opportunities, residents to be able to learn more about the complexity of this project and to express concerns and to be able to interact with both the developer and with the professional staff and consultants who we I think that's it. I think this is a good project, right time for Boise State. And I'm comfortable with moving forward on this exemption certificate as the last one.
Thank you, Dean.
I love the following Dean to the code and everything.
We're going to switch spots.
No. I think it's a good project, too. I know there are concerns that people have, but I think basically this thing has been well thought out, well planned, and now when I hear that rental, the vacation rental has been part of it, and not what it is, well, that's one of the concerns I have. So I like to drop that.
Thank you.
Marilyn, I just have a question for you. Could you give like a 60-second for dummies summary of what MCC actually is?
Sure. So I won't use any of the jargon. We have completed paperwork with the federal government to be a community development finance institution, CDFI. And we're also a community development entity. So those are designations that allow us to use different funds for the purpose of community development, and which is very broadly defined, not necessarily downtown development. So we are a nonprofit. We have a board of, I don't know how many people it is, but it's made up of members of Northern Initiatives, the Michigan Strategic Fund, CINAIR, which is another CDFI, Invest Detroit, which is another CDB. So we have representation from across the state that we are beholden to. Every decision we make has to be approved by our board. So me, Marilyn Crowley, is just kind of operating at the will of them. We have a very close relationship with the MEDC, two of their Mark Brandy, their fund manager, is on our board, as well as their senior vice president of community development. And so we often are kind of asked to look at projects, not necessarily 100% of the time, but they'll say, this is a really difficult project and it's a hole in the community and we'd like for you to figure out how to do it, because we're like grant ninjas.
It just won't stop. Thanks, John.
So we often are asked to look at projects that are kind of the most difficult in the state to look at. I just came from a controversial public meeting in Mount Pleasant last night. That's their notorious Parcel B. They've owned it for over a decade, and they've had four developers try to figure out how to do it. And it's just a hard site. It's in a floodplain. It's contaminated. It's got bad soils. It's got a bad market. And because we're a nonprofit and we know how to use all these different pots of money, we can make the project break even. And the reason why we do it is because it's an asset to the community. It's filling in a hole that was there. And in that case, it's taking a publicly owned parcel and putting it on the tax rolls. We also apply for a pot of funding called New Market Tax Credits, which is a very competitive funding source that is federally allocated across the states. And Michigan just doesn't get that many allocations. And those are used for the most kind of low income stressed census tracts, that funding source. So a big part of what we do is apply for that funding and then bring it into Michigan so that it doesn't kind of get passed over from us. We create a strong application and a strong portfolio that so we can continue to attract federal money that we otherwise wouldn't get. So we were successful this year. We got a $55 million allocation. That's not money that goes to MCC. We are the fiduciary that then is able to invest those tax credits into projects in low-income census tracts. So Does that?
Yeah, that helps. So you're gonna own this building, right?
We do. We get involved in projects in a couple different ways. We either can own it long term, which is the case in this project. We own Lofts on Lake Street LLC 100%. We also have the ability to invest in projects as well as either a lender or an equity investor. So that's a situation that we sometimes have. In this case, there wasn't a developer who was interested in doing the project, so we decided to do it ourselves and get it done and own it long term. So we sometimes have, and we originally had a partnership with Scott Gillespie, and I decided to just represent the project myself. But yes, in this particular project, and as well as our Cadillac project and our Grayling project, we will own them long term, and they will be like an asset to the organization to continue to point to and say, this is an example of what we do and who we are.
So when you say long term, what's the minimum long term?
I would say the goal is to own it for over 30 years. These projects are very expensive because we're designing them to be a long-term asset. A lot of private developers kind of design and plan to flip their exit strategy. We don't have an exit strategy. And one of the reasons we don't is because we'll never be able to make the money back that we put into it. We're anticipating putting over $5 million of like cash into the project, and we'll never be able to sell the property for the cost that we spent on it. So we don't have an exit strategy. We're not looking at trying to make a return on our investment. We're trying to hold it and make sure it has sufficient reserves and sufficient maintenance and operations. So we're not losing money, but it basically is an asset that pays for itself and is a positive to the community.
So will you have a local manager on site managing the property and all that sort of thing?
We will. We're planning on hiring a professional management company, and there will be like a leasing office space, and we do plan on having a maintenance person. I don't know if they'll be on site 100% of the time. I don't think they'll live in the unit, but we've already started interviewing for those companies. We are interviewing. We haven't picked any.
And then there's been talk about the commercial property, so will that'll be a market rate for the commercial properties? So
I would say it's market rate. It's we're currently modeling $10 a square foot. So for new space, that's pretty affordable, but for one city, that might be market rate. So I guess we would hope to perform better than that, but that's what we're targeting right now.
I'm not sure where I read it, if it was in the agreement. Well, first of all, we're talking about a tentative agreement, a resolution we're going to pass, and then a tentative agreement. The details still need to be worked out.
That would be my recommendation. I would make the approval of the agreement contingent upon finalizing the tax incentive agreement. Again, the section that we're talking about on that is section 2.4B. And we got some language from Maryland's attorney. And rather than us trying to hash it out here today, and this talks about if they didn't follow the terms of the agreement, what would be the recapture period? And they're proposing a much shorter recapture period. This is the proposal that's before you. And I think rather than trying to make a decision today, we should talk to their people, have a discussion back and forth, and come back to the city commission with that. But I don't see that's the only item that they've identified. Unless the commissioners identified any other items that they thought needed to be addressed in that agreement, as I mentioned before, I want to at least get it before so we could start the discussion on that component.
Well, when I read through it too, they're required to provide an annual report of the rentals, so you know that it's not being short-term rental. There's some. That sound familiar to anybody?
I can address that. Just to document that the rate rental commitment is continuing to be met. So what are the rates for their units? So meet the objective of the 51% of 80%.
And with something so complicated, is 24 months enough time, or what happens after 24 months if it does, if it isn't done?
That's a great question. I mean, obviously, I would be very upset if we're not done in 24 months. But you know, 24 months from now is into 2021, right?
Yeah.
I would anticipate the latest that we would start is April, the very latest is April of next year. And then we have a great construction manager who is very used to all of these kind of complicated soils and all of that. And they want to get it done in less than 12 months. So we're talking about doing like panelized metal studs, so having it manufactured and brought in to help with the construction timeline. So, you know, I think we would be well within the 24 months. Obviously, if something happens and we have to come back for an extension, I would explain to you what happened. But, you know, we set our target construction start on Cadillac, and we hit it. So I think we're pretty tuned in on how long all these things take.
Well, those are all the questions I have. I think this is a great project, and it's been really interesting from the beginning, you know, having the opportunity to sit through all the meetings of where we started and the emotion and the anxiety that there was and working through all that. And, you know, I think we've come to a really good place. And what I heard about some of the concerns about local businesses, I have a different idea, thinking my vision is that this is going to help them and it's going to help the town in a lot of different ways. And I'm fully supportive of this.
Thank you. Mike, you wanted to add something?
Well, Hugh ended up asking a couple of questions. I thought, like, when we were talking about long-term, I thought a definition of that would be helpful, yeah, too. But then as Marilyn continued to talk about Michigan Community Capital and the investments that they're going to put in this property, and it would never be able to get that out cash-wise, but they want to have a project that's viable and sustainable long-term, it made me think, with everything except for the 24-month construction period, of the Dilbert, where you basically have an angel investor that's coming in with a specific purpose, and their specific purpose isn't like most capital ventures, which is to make money. That's part of it, to make enough to make sure that the project can pay for itself, but it has a social good. In the Dilbert instance, Bob Grove, his social good is to bring back a historic artifact for the community and make sure it's on a financial viable footing to go forward. He would never be able to turn around and sell that as a profit-making venture for the money that he's putting into it and will be putting into it in the next couple of years. Very similar to what Marilyn was describing here. Their foundation, their organization is set up in such a way that, you know, the money's important, but they have other factors and criteria that they're looking as well too. And I think this long-term component is something that you heard from the leader of their organization, Eric, when he first came to our design committee meeting and talked about the materials, and we're looking at the facades of the building, and, you know, how do we make it look more like Boeing, but have materials that are going to have longevity that make sure that it's going to stand the test of time. So whether it's 20 or 30, or they've even mentioned some longer periods of time, I think it's important that they are looking at this long-term. And I say, you know, this is not a normal business venture process. And it's, you know, in some respects, it's a partnership with the community as well, too. And that's what they're asking for tonight. And that goes back to the other issues, our other goals and priorities as a community that we've identified. And this is our two cents that we have to put in to make these things happen. And I agree with Hugh's comment as well, too, with regards to the businesses. How this, I think, see this as a potential for solving some of the solutions or some of the issues or concerns that are out there about other empty storefronts or lack of workforce, things of that nature. I actually think this will have the potential to improve it for some of the factors that Ron said about opening up other housing in the community as well too, as people move here, whether they're starter units or, you know, simplifying units later on. So again, I completely agree with this. I would continue to recommend that we adopt the approve the request as presented, contingent upon coming back with a fine-tuned development agreement.
Well, I get to go last, so I think everything's been said. I totally agree with you. closing statements there, Mike. I totally agree with Ron. The seniors are a group that could take advantage of this. We could open up their homestead house. I agree with you, Dean, with the complexity and the expertise and professionalism that our staff and your two companies have brought forward is truly enlightening. I agree with you that this will help our community business-wise, housing-wise. Yeah, I've been on this housing subcommittees going on probably 2 to 3 years, and this is exactly what we need, along with other housing. And we're not ignoring other housing opportunities either, but this is a step in the right direction. So I'm talking away, but everything's already been said. I am in full support.
So I would make a motion that the City Commission adopt a resolution for a commercial rehabilitation exemption certificate for lots on Lake Street LLC.
It should be lots.
I'm sorry, yeah. LLC for the development at 100 and 120 Lake Street and 114 State Street, and authorize the city manager and city clerk treasurer to execute tax incentive agreement between the lofts on Lake Street, LLC, and the City of Boyne City.
Second.
We have a second. Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Conklin?
Aye.
French?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Page?
Aye.
Salomon?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. We appreciate everything you've done for our town. Shine in the near future, and it's the result of.
Plus, I am disappointed we broke down in another count first. We used to be first.
It started a long time ago. Okay, thank you, Mr. Pike.
We will.
Be using local labor and local.
Barbara, we're not going to answer that.
Okay.
We will. Excuse you, too. I'm sure you have to.
Thank you very much. After your next meeting.
Yes. Safe travels. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on to old business. Right allocation public hearing. Scott.
Thank you, Matt. This is public hearing for the allocation request made by Mr. Wright. This is a portion of the alley that runs between Vision Edmonds. The current alley is dead end because of previous vacations. The portion here is approximately 198 feet, and that starts about 130 feet from Hall Street. Mr. Wright submitted the application with the petition with all the other adjacent property owner signatures to support the application. It has gone through the Planning Commission and it has gone through the public notice. Staff fully supports the recommendation that there are no future foreseen uses for this particular alley and there are no city utilities in it. So this is the public hearing and it's being presented to you for consideration.
Thank you. And at this point, it's 8:24, I will open the public hearing. Thank you, Scott. Rob, how did you're here. Let us speak.
Thank you. Richard Wright, 920 Edmund Street. Just real briefly, I'll extend it by bringing up all the reasons why and the benefits to the city and to the citizens. Rather, I'll just yield any time if you have any questions or if there's been any negative feedback that somebody contested, if I could address that. But if not, I'll just put it back in the commission's hands.
Thank you. At this time, I'd like to hear any comments from department heads or staff. Any other public? Thank you. 24, I will close the public hearing. We'll go to the board deliberation. Dean?
Sure. We got a presentation a month or so ago, and I'm fully supportive. Sounds like a good option.
Thank you, Sally.
Yeah, I'm good.
Thank you.
I move to approve the request of Richard Wright to vacate 198 feet of the alley north of Edmund, south of Division, west of Hall, and east of Sydney Streets.
I'll second.
Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Grunge.
Aye.
Needhammer.
Aye.
Page.
Aye.
Solomon.
Aye.
Conklin.
Aye.
Motion carried.
Moving on to item C, river jumping ordinance. Consideration to adopt proposed ordinance for river jumping to one river under certain circumstances. Yes, Chief.
Thank you, Mayor. Now that we got the two easy topics out of the way, here's the tough one. As you recall, back in October, the commission asked us to, after some discussion, asked us to put together an ordinance for trying to curtail the people jumping into the river off the boardwalk and in through town. First reading was presented on May 14th. June 25th, the second reading was proposed, but there was some comments from the commissioners as to language issues. So, and one of the Commissioner Solomon had some particular language that he wanted incorporated, so I met with him. We kind of hashed through that, and we came up with the proposed ordinance as you have it right here for second reading.
Thank you. Any comments from staff and or the public? Yes, sir. Brian?
Rob, President, Virgin Press. What do you proceed to stop but just jumping in the river? Is that what it is? Or, you know, when I was a kid, I jumped, and we done it all those years, and we didn't get hurt or nothing like that. I've never heard of any problems or anything, and I'm just asking a question. What?
Fair enough. Thank you. Chief, you want to answer that?
Sure.
Yes.
Well, as I said, back in October we had a meeting. We discussed it at that meeting. We discussed it on the May 14th City Commission meeting. We discussed it on the June 25th City Commission meeting. So we've covered it. The information's been out there. But if you weren't able to follow along with that, I can read it. The proposed reading of the ordinance is on property owned by the City of Glen City. Persons shall not jump or dive into Lake Charlevoix or the Boyne River from any man-made structure or from any object higher than the riverbank, including but not limited to docks, walkways, trees, and fences. This, again, as we stated previously, we're not trying to regulate fun. We're not trying to take kids' youth away from them. And you can certainly swim in the river. You can jump in the river from the riverbanks. What we don't want is people jumping off the boardwalk, the kids jump off the boardwalk, they climb the fence, they jump off the fence. We don't want somebody to crack their head over them. And because they're kids, they're going to use poor judgment. So we're going to help them. This gives us a tool. We don't anticipate running down the road and tickets all the time. It gives us a tool to tell the kids they're probably a safer place to participate in river fun.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Any other comments? Call the board deliberation. Seven?
I'm good.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm good.
I'm good for the language.
Yeah, I'm good too. You know, my original concerns were to have enough specificity that somebody could read the ordinance and know what they couldn't do. Jeff also helped me understand to have some flexibility in there because he didn't use these words, but kids are always inventing new ways to take risks with the ship. And so it has some flexibility in the ordinance that would help our police department be able to enforce this if it came to be. So yeah, I'm fully supportive of the language that's here.
Okay. I'm glad you two worked it out here. So.
Yeah. It was brutal.
All right.
I move to adopt the proposed ordinance to prohibit jumping into the point of order under certain circumstances.
Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Page?
Aye.
Solomon?
Aye.
Conklin?
Aye.
Grunch?
Aye.
Motion carried.
And that goes into effect, Scott, in
15 days.
15 days.
I'll publish it. Yeah.
Thank you. Moving on to new business, number eight, pavement marking contract discussion. Tim?
Thank you, Mayor. Each year, the city does an extensive street painting program at parking lot, parking spot, pavement program throughout our streets and municipal lots. A couple weeks ago, I was contacted by the contractor that did our work last year. He indicated that they would be willing to extend the same unit prices to the city that we paid last year. That's an offer that they've been putting out to a number of municipalities this year. Understanding that it's late winter, people are kind of behind in getting their bids out right now. They were the only bidder last year, last time we bid it, and that has been kind of a history of difficulty of getting more than one bid for this work historically. The firm that did the work last year is from Grand Blanc, so they travel a fair distance here to Northern Lower to do work for a number of municipalities. So my recommendation is that the City Commission accept the offer to extend the unit prices, and then I'll work with the contractor to determine the exact locations of where we'll do the program, and we limit it to approximately the same amount, which is about $30,000 that was done last year.
Thank you. Any comments from the department heads or public? Okay. Go to board deliberation. Hugh?
Tim, do you think we need to do it now or just wait till next year since it's, you know, we are where we are?
Yeah. Well, for example, it was the second week of July when we did it last year. So we're pretty close on target. We're maybe a few weeks behind. I definitely recommend topping them up every year. They do wear pretty thin, so.
Is there some reason why at the intersection of Water and East Street, they didn't do that pedestrian crossing when they resurfaced that? So that would be
Oh, yes. In fact, that was very purposeful. The lake between the Dilworth and the post office, if that's the
Well, we'd go from the corner, the tax, to the real estate office that way.
Well, the lake of the intersection from the post office to the Dilworth was eliminated,
right,
because of a safety concern. There's quite right. a bit of vehicular traffic there. And when we talked with MDOT, literally right before I think the project started, we raised that concern. And MDOT agreed, based on their safety assessment, that it would be better just to have the crossings at the other three lanes of the intersection.
Mike's got a...
Yes, Mike?
Hugh, if I'm understanding your question, was between the real estate office and due south
right.
to the tax.
Right.
That isn't considered an MDOT lane, so they're not responsible for those markings.
Okay.
They only do the portions that are along their trunk line. So that's why they did the section between the post office and the real estate office. And that was the only leg on that intersection that they did. They find exactly where they don't have to do it.
Yeah, right. Well, I thought if they repaved it, they would have put the markings back because they went through that intersection a little bit.
They've never done that corner. That's always been our lane to do.
Well, I take your recommendation, Tim, but you know, a lot of the things at this point, you know, in the spring, it's nice to spruce up the town. It looks good after a long winter, and now we're two of the major holidays are over. And so, but if you think it's best to keep the maintenance up, I support that.
Yes.
I hear exactly what you're saying, and a couple of years ago we tried to move up our painting calendar so we can catch it, and especially this year, and I think we did it a little bit better last year, we were doing it too soon, and we have some good day temperatures, but the road temperature hadn't come up warm enough for the paint to cure properly, so it didn't hold up, so we tried moving it forward. And I think we're right about at the sweet spot now. We're going to be a couple weeks late this year than we usually are, but we really can't go much sooner than this anyway, as much as we'd like to. And I'd always kind of pushing new for Mushroom Festival or for all these other things. So we're looking really good when a lot of our visitors start coming back, and before the traffic really gets heavier too. But there's just a real fine window that I've been learning a lot about in the Haven Park in the last couple of years. So it's a balancing act.
Okay, Ron?
I'll keep good with the recommendation.
Okay, so?
How soon does this happen? Does this be done?
Yeah, if approved tonight, we'll get it scheduled probably still yet in the next 2 to 3 weeks.
Believe it or not, I've had an inquiry about one particular spot where the parking spaces are kind of...
Wonder where that is.
Well, actually, it's by it's American Legion and the car across the street. Some are long and some are short, and if people get parking wrong, they can get hit by people coming out of one of the parking lots. So it's just something that... was going to bring up anyway. But I'm good for it.
Okay. I'm good with it. Looking for a motion.
I would move we approve the contract extension offer from M&M Pavement Marking Inc. of Grand Blanc in an amount not to exceed $30,000 and authorize the city manager to execute the document.
Second. Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Page?
Aye.
Solomon?
Aye.
Conklin?
Aye.
Crunch?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thank you. Moving on to go to the order. All right.
We don't have
anything.
Okay.
What's that? Okay.
Sure.
Okay. I just want to echo your comments that our staff sure did a great job of making our town look great before and after. The next morning, it was almost cleaned up, so I appreciate that. Great job. Under announcements, we have the Boyne Valley Ireland Sister City Tourism Ceremony. We'll be held on Thursday, July 18th at 6:45 or 6:15. We'll see. At the Boyne City Public Performing Arts Center. And the next regular City Commission meeting is scheduled for Tuesday, July 22nd at noon. It is 8:38.